both in the gospel and in the Genesis story, do not be afraid, for God will hear your voice. And in the situation in Genesis, and as we've said, Abram was given a promise, if you remember, that he would be the father of many nations and that all people of the earth would be blessed through him, and that he would be given a son in his old age. Well, time passes and there's still no son. So Sarah says to Abraham, take my handmaid and lie with her and have a son with her. And as my Hebrew professor said, if your wife tells you to take another woman, she's not serious. But Abraham lies with the handmaid and she becomes pregnant, and so Ishmael is born. And so evolves the saga between Isaac and Ishmael. Just always to give us a little humor. But Sarah becomes very jealous of Hagar and Ishmael because she's still without a son. And so she says, get out of here. She asks Abraham to get rid of them. And so he takes Hagar and Ishmael out into the wilderness with a little food and water and leaves them. Well, it doesn't take very long before they run out and nothing is left. And so she is at the point of despair that they will not survive. And I wonder about all of us having situations in our life where we are really forced into a corner, and how do we respond to those situations? Do we turn to prayer, asking God for help, or do we really let anxiety run amok and take over? And I'm sure every single one of us has incidents in our life where we felt in a place where there were no more options available, and that we had to rely on God in faith to provide in those situations. And so, you know, think about that. One of the things that helps us when we're in situations that seem impossible is to look back over our lives of the times when we remember that God was faithful. And it helps us remember that God provides. You know, one of my earliest remembrances of provision by God was about 40 years ago in my early 20s. And I had gone to Europe with some friends. And their flight left before mine. We were in Amsterdam at that time. And I was leaving the next day. I had one more day before my flight left. And I misread the train schedule, you know, because it's in military time. And I missed my flight home. And I had no credit card 40 years ago, no cell phone. I think I had a few dollars left in my pocket and my train ticket that I had taken to the airport. And it was kind of scary because it was my first time to be in an international airport abroad. And so I go to the ticket counter, and the woman says, there are no flights available. And put me on the waiting list, and there were over 100 people on the waiting list. And I was scared to death because I have no money, I don't know what to do. And I found this little prayer, this interfaith prayer room in the airport. And I went in there, and they had this little book, and I wrote my prayer to God in the book. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And it was practically about 9 hours later, and my name was called, and I went home on business class. But that was one of my first experiences of being in a predicament and really praying my heart out of what am I going to do? And so it's those kinds of things to go back in our life and remember how God provides. I read a story that really impressed me a couple of years ago about a woman. Her name is Ann Sieben. She was a nuclear engineer, so she was a very smart, capable person. And she was a little burned out for work, so she walked the Camino to Santiago in Spain. And then she went back and did it from France, and then from Germany, and from Canterbury all the way to Rome, and and then she kind of came to this place. She wondered, am I a pilgrim or am I an engineer? How do I want to live my life? And so she has actually walked all over the world. She doesn't carry a phone. She takes no money, no credit cards, no camera. Just a small backpack with a change of clothes and a few food items, and she walks by faith. And she takes what is given her for food, and she sleeps where people offer her a bed for the night. And she walks all over the world in faith. Here's a very smart, logical engineer who is living a life of faith. That's how she felt called. She felt very burned out and living in a world of materialism and commercialism. And she said every time she comes back home from pilgrimage, she just kind of goes crazy for a while with all the noise and the input. And it's a very different world from the silent plodding every day of being with God and trusting in every step. That's the promise that God gives Hagar. And so the gospel is speaking to us about how do we respond to these situations. I remember another incident when I was in seminary and I had to do my clinical education, a clinical pastoral education where you go and work in a hospital for, I did an intensive, so I had to work all summer in a hospital with the chaplain and you make visits and rotations. And I remember visiting a woman who was dying of cancer. And I just was in awe of her faith. Her whole family was frantic. Everybody was just sort of out of control. And she had solid trust. She was a Muslim woman who had incredible faith. She knew that everything was going to be okay. You know, that same summer, I was wondering, how am I going to live? Because I, you know, took out a loan to pay the tuition for the clinical pastoral education, and I got a phone call from a family member who paid my rent that summer. I remember right before I came to All Saints, and All Saints had gone through a challenge right before I came. And All Saints received a $250,000 gift from someone we've never been able to identify. We don't know who Ms. Lopez is. Nobody knows who Ms. Lopez is. We couldn't figure out if she wasn't a member of the church. Where did this come from? But it came when the community needed it. So faith is not this logical, practical, I'm going to figure it out. It's when we get to that place where we know I can only rely on God in this moment. And it's really an opportunity. Cynthia Bourgeaud talks about an incident where a friend of hers was driving up in Maine, and she was crossing this area. It was sort of a marsh area, and no one travels that way. And her car broke down, and she was like, what am I going to do? No one travels this road. I could be out here for days, and no one will find me. And, you know, she felt the tension in her body and the nervousness and all of this building up. And then she remembered a teaching she had received. And it was about letting go and being in the moment with what is. So she intentionally let go of all of that. And she began to notice how the sun was hitting the water in the marsh and how beautiful it was. And she said it wasn't long after that that this little food truck came putting down the road and offered her a ride, which was 100 miles down the road. There's something about how we open to receive God's grace in the moment. God's grace is always present to us, but we're not always in a position to receive it. If we're frantic, if we're totally knotted up in worry and anxiety, we're not in a position to receive grace. I mean, just feel that. It's not an open posture. And so we have to intentionally, and sometimes we have to practice it over and over. We start tensing up, and we have to let go. But that's part of what we have to do. Because it is there for us. And perhaps sometimes these little incidents along the way are given to us to help us grow in faith. And so it's an invitation to us to trust. We do have an option. We're not in charge of the outcome. but we are in charge of being present. And it takes practice. And there is that word called surrender, which we don't like very much. But it might be helpful if we just think of surrender as acceptance. Acceptance of what is in the moment. And acceptance that I don't have control over the circumstances. I can only sort of be with what's happening inside of me. Am I being open to God's grace in the moment, or am I closed to God's grace in the moment? It's really a very simple formula for us. And Hagar does that. Putting her son under a tree, watching him from afar, she goes off where she can have some time with God. And she's desperate. She, for her, it's a life and death situation. And she opens her eyes and she sees a well of water. Several years ago, when I lived in the Diocese of California, the San Francisco Bay Area, and Bishop Swing was the then bishop, the Bishop of California, and the Diocese of California has a retreat center called Bishop's Ranch. It's up by Healdsburg. It's a beautiful area. And we had a dinner at Bishop's Ranch, and somehow I got seated next to the bishop. And I asked the bishop jokingly, I said, "Do you have any cattle on this ranch?" And he said, "No, I'm all hat, no cattle." And it just, you know, reminded me of, you know, the psalm that God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. Really, one of the best things for us to learn in our lives is that we don't own anything. Everything belongs to God. Everything. Anne Sieben, who walked the pilgrimages, I told you about, that was her practice, realizing nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to God. And if we have that attitude, then generosity just flows because there's nothing to cling to. She said the reason she didn't travel with a phone or a computer or a camera, because there's nothing to steal. There's nothing to steal. Are they going to take my shoes? There was an incident in Central America where she was surrounded by Sandinistas. They knew she was a spy. She had to be a spy. Walking out of here alone, they dumped everything out of her backpack. They couldn't find a camera. They couldn't find, you know, a phone. They couldn't find any money. There was nothing to steal, nothing to communicate with the outside world. She couldn't possibly be a spy. It's an amazing story. And so they let her go. Amazing faith. God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. And I grew up with a cattleman, so I know how much cattle cost. That's a lot of money. Everything belongs to God. Everything. Even my body. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to God. God gave me this life. Gave me this body. You know, at our memorial service, it's, you know, we give it back to the dust. The dust of the earth that God created. We're all carbon, everything is. It's all connected. It's all one. And when we take that to heart, when we find ourselves clinging, it's so good to remember. Or if we have a hard time with that, look up into the sky. And see the little specks in the stars. And in comparison, we're really insignificant. It all belongs to God. And God provides. Amen.